This episode of the Lou Rockwell Show is sponsored by...
Does civil disobedience really get you excited? Go to freestateproject.org, get signed up, move to New Hampshire, get involved with the next wave of liberty activism, and be the next Rosa Parks. The Free State Project is your best chance for liberty in your lifetime. freestateproject.org.
This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's great to have as our guest this morning Dr. Joseph Salerno. Joe is academic vice president of the Mises Institute. He's professor of economics, head of the graduate program at the Lubin Graduate School at Pace University in New York. He's editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics and great expert on money and banking. And Joe, you know, here they are talking about nationalizing the big banks. What does that mean? How concerned should we be?
I think we should be quite concerned, Lou, that they're floating this as a trial balloon. I mean, they may not follow through on it, but it's really nationalizing or socializing a key sector of the economy that really controls the whole development of our structure of production, our prices, interest rates, and so on. And so they can really wreck the banking system. Fortunately, there's a number of people in the Obama administration that have spoken against it. Geithner is one, and Larry Summers once called the government lousy bank managers. So they may be people who are counseling him not to do that.
Are the liabilities of the big banks so huge that it's actually be difficult for the federal government to nationalize them, assuming that, of course, they're not going to just repudiate any of the liabilities?
Yeah, well, they're actually saying that because the liabilities are so great, that's the reason for nationalizing them. But you bring up a good point. I don't see how the federal government itself, without incurring huge deficits, could nationalize the banks. You know, in a way that is, let's say, consistent with at least nominal capitalism, without just seizing them, in other words. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Who knows, but if the commercial real estate market follows the home real estate market, and it looks like it's going to, and then we have all the other, you know, questions of derivatives and so forth. I mean, is it actually possible that the big banks have liabilities in the many, many trillions of dollars? And therefore, would it actually be difficult even for the federal government to take over those institutions and become liable for everything?
Yeah, I think it would be difficult. I think we're in uncharted territory right here, and it remains to be seen how they would actually go about doing that. Though if they had the will to do it, I don't doubt that they could do it.
Well, what does that mean? Let's say they're, you know, it just obviously means hyperinflation. It means centralized control over credit.
Right. It could be hyperinflation. And also, by the way, price controls, a repressed inflation where we have massive shortages. There would have to be a significant monetary inflation backing up this takeover, well, socialization of the entire system.
So they could only do it if we replicate Weimar.
Yeah, that's what it would appear to me that's the case, and maybe one of the reasons why they would not do it.
Well, very interesting.
I want to mention there's always sort of talk that it's impossible to cut wages and prices, but particularly wages won't fall. But what we see now happening is the economy is adjusting despite all the money that the government is forcing into the economy. There are a number of large companies that are either getting rid of bonuses, freezing bonuses, or cutting wage rates. There was an article last week that went through a number of the large companies that were now doing this, and they're doing it specifically to save jobs. In other words, they see the connection between keeping wage rates above equilibrium levels and losing jobs. And they even mentioned that workers involved in these wage cuts understand that they're taking these wage cuts not just to save their own jobs, but to save their fellow employees' jobs. So this whole idea that workers suffer from this terrible money illusion and will never take nominal pay cuts, again, is being empirically refuted, as most of the Keynesian system has been empirically refuted over the years.
Well, Joe, you know, what you say about the wage question is one reason that the pro-union legislation that so many of Obama's supporters want passed is so frightening. I mean, the business that would allow the card checkoff, so-called card checkoff elections that would enable unions to personally terrorize individual workers and make them sign a card to join the union and therefore make unionization of companies far, far easier than it would be with the current election system where people don't know who's voting how.
Yeah, I mean, this is really just blatantly anti-American to not permit secret ballots in an election that's imposed by the central government through its collective bargaining laws. So, as you said, it would terrorize workers, and it would also slow down the adjustment process. The decline of wages and prices that have to take place.
And you've pointed out how some of this labor legislation of the 1930s, the NRLB and the Wagner Act and so forth, actually helped bring on the depression within the depression in 1937.
Yeah, that's true. Right before we had that depression within the depression, we had a situation where unions got big wage increases. And you can see this in Murray Rothbard's book, and I think even in Vetter and Galloway's book. In both those books, they point out that this was an important event in setting off that depression within depression.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
How would the transition to a free society happen? Libertarian media? Lawsuits against the state? How about libertarians elected in increasing numbers, even to the state legislature? All of these things have already happened in New Hampshire. Find out more at freestateproject.org.
Well, Joe, what do you see from the Austrian money supply? Talk a little bit about how you and Murray Rothbard came up with that and what it's telling you right now about the future inflation.
The money supply figures are not good. I'm just looking at them. The monetary base year over year, through December, increased by 76%, which is tremendous. Now, much of that is being held as excess reserves by the banks, and also some of it is going into currency. Okay, it's being pulled out of the banks by people that are nervous about the prospects of the banks. But the money supply has increased. If you take a broad, even the Fed official statistics have increased. The MZM, which is the closest to the Austrian money supply, has increased by about 10% year over year from November 08 from November 07 to November 08, and M2 has increased by 7.5% in the same period. So this is only going to get worse. We're going to have more monetary expansion as these policies come into play that Obama's talking about, the stimulus and so on. And eventually, the natural tendency of prices to fall during a recession will be reversed by this, and we'll begin to see, you know, an outbreak of price inflation, at which point we'll have stagflation, which will cause the government to want to intervene even more into the economy.
And as you said, with price and wage controls and maybe capital controls and exchange controls and the whole panoply of...
Yes, I think that we're on a precipice here, that as things worsen and as the only idea that the central bank and the government really has, and that is simply print money to finance deficit spending, that has always been the Keynesian program. Despite all the new models that have been developed since the 1980s and the new Keynesian economics and so on, and the new central banking approach they say is responsible for the Great Moderation from 1980 or so, or 1984 or so until very recently, with all of that, really the only tool that they have is just spend and create money.
And they'll always assume that they haven't spent enough and haven't created enough if it's not working.
That's absolutely right. That's their mantra, that if some doesn't work, then more will have to work. And they'll keep operating in that fashion. And when that doesn't work, and Hayek pointed this out, what happens is the next step is to go towards all-around planning.
And therefore nationalizing the banks and maybe nationalizing other institutions as well.
Yeah, certainly, yes. Manufacturing institutions.
Well, so this is what John Maynard Keynes and all his cohorts have visited on us. Outside of members of the Austrian school, is there not anybody in the mainstream economics profession who's questioning any of this, or are they all just Krugmans and semi-Krugmans?
Most of them are not, or the great majority of them are not. There are a few isolated old-style monetarists that have been questioning, not necessarily the bailout. Most of them were in favor of the bailout, but what has come after that. They wanted the banks to fail and simply to, you know, buy up the bad assets of these banks and pay off the depositors. But they may be our allies in the all-round, the movement towards all-round planning. But there's not many of them left, and they're very old.
So it depends just on the Austrian school, really?
Yeah, it really does. It comes down to the Austrian school. The Austrian school is really the only vibrant free market school left standing. The Chicago school, the old-style Chicago school, Milton Friedman and so on, it's pretty much dead right now.
Well, this shows the responsibility on your shoulders, Joe Salerno, and I think on the shoulders of the Mises Institute. Seems like this really is our time. I mean, we've been talking about this sort of thing. You've been talking about what the consequences of policies of the sort that Greenspan and Bush and Clinton and the rest of them were following. And of course, it's all happening before our eyes. So don't you think that more and more non-economists, more and more non-establishment people are beginning to listen to the Austrian school, not only in this country, but all over the world?
They absolutely are. I mean, there was an article in the German, leading German publication, Der Spiegel, in which the Austrian school was mentioned. The Mises Institute was mentioned. I was mentioned. Guido Hulsmann, Thorstein Polit. And so we really are the only institutional organization, or the only institution that has thrown down or taken up the challenge to the progressive inflation and centralization of the economy. I mean, not only that, if you go back further, in the 1990s, we were saying that there was a financial bubble developing and that eventually the pipe would have to be paid, and we had the stock market crash in the late 90s. And then the same thing with housing. Mark Thornton of the Mises Institute was one of the first to jump on this and to start writing about the housing bubble in the early part of this decade. And other Austrians have written about it, and then we were the ones who were proven right. At the same time, a prominent monetarist in 2005 wrote that there was no bubble. There was no housing bubble. Looking back on history, as they are always doing, trying to figure out laws from history, he saw that this is not the way that the U.S. housing market usually reacted. Okay, but once again, history never beats theory. Okay, logical theory is always what you need to at least give you an idea of what is going to happen in the future, if not exactly when it will happen.
And Joe, whatever happened to the supply siders? Well, I guess they're all semi-Keynesians anyway, but are they extant?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of them around, but and they still prattle on about cutting taxes, but they haven't contributed anything to the current discussion of the problems we're having with the financial crisis. Most of them support the welfare state, as Bruce Bartlett has recently written in favor of, and so you know they're pretty much useless also as allies.
I'll never forget the first time that I met the most prominent supply sider. I was working for Ron Paul. This is in the late 1970s, and it's when he was promoting his famous drawing on the napkin and all that business. And he came to a meeting of congressmen only, and I was able to sneak in. And he said that he wanted to disarm all the Democrats in the room because his point was more money for the government. We needed more money for welfare, more money for other government programs, and this was the way to get it, his supply-side tax program. But that people should always keep in mind that all he cared about was more money for the government. And that, you know, because I thought of this guy as a free market person, and I must say I never thought the same about him after that.
I understand that. Also, by the way, they're also inflationists, but they wanted a gold-plated inflation. They wanted some kind of a gold price rule. Basically, what they want is plenty of good money and plenty of it. And they thought they could get it by sort of fooling the public by having some sort of a link to gold, some nominal link to gold. But Murray Rothbard pointed that out a long while ago, and he's still correct about it.
Although Ron Paul is hearing rumors that, and of course, there are meetings all the time going on in Basel and other places in around the world of central bankers to try to come up with some new international monetary system that will automatically and magically fix the present problem without, of course, them having to actually cut back on the inflation. But there's rumors that they want to sprinkle a little gold dust on some kind of Bretton Woods III and fool people that way. So I guess in some sense, the worst of the supply-sider ideas still have some currency.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the supply-siders always liked Bretton Woods. And so, those ideas are still circulating. But to go back to that sort of system, they would still have to bite the bullet in some sense. And I don't think they're willing to do that.
No, they're not. They want, and of course, this is why Keynes wanted a world central bank, right? And
that's
still the dream of all these people. So there'd be no escape. So you wouldn't have any country able to inflate less than others and thereby benefit.
Right. Everybody's there wouldn't be any change in exchange rates because everybody's inflating at the same rate. That's of course called central bank coordination. But of course it's just a cover for a worldwide inflation.
Well, Joe, if all of a sudden the people in Washington, the congressmen, the bankers, central bankers, the Treasury people, the White House were to give you a call and say, "Come down here and tell us what we ought to do, and we're really going to pay attention to you," what would you tell them?
Oh, immediately shut down the Fed. prohibit them from ever again buying any assets, from expanding their balance sheet. At that point, the inflation would stop. Interest rates would go sky high for a while, and we would have the recession adjustment process that we need to have. And then in short order after that, I would have all sorts of laws, taxes, and so on taken off gold. I would allow banks to offer gold deposits as well as deposits in less inflationary foreign currencies. Basically, completely deregulate the banking system and shut down the Fed. I think that's the key.
Joe Salerno, I wish they'd give you a call.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, thanks very much for coming on and telling our listeners about this.
You're welcome, Lou. It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.